When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum.
Hello and welcome to the matchup. I'm Ben Ladner, joined as always by Seth Tau. We have a midweek episode for you previewing the upcoming Butler game, maybe taking a look back at the Louisville game and kind of just an assessment of where Indiana is at this point in the season, kind of between two really big non-conference games. But first, Seth, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm feeling great. You and I were just talking before we came on. We're basically at the tail end of our semesters. I've turned in all my major assignments before the year ends. I've got one more exam tomorrow that, frankly, I'm not too stressed about. You have a final project due tonight or tomorrow, and then you'll be wrapped up.
So. Loose deadline, but, I mean, once I finish with that, I'm just hanging out until the Butler game.
It feels good. It feels good. I'm heading home, driving back to Atlanta on Friday morning / afternoon, so that's the day before the Butler game. I'll miss that as I have been prone to do over the last 3 years, taking that extra day early
on vacation. I'll be here for the Butler game, and then I drive back to Maryland for the holidays on Monday. I was originally going to drive back on Sunday until I realized that if I drove all day Sunday, I would probably get into a car accident checking my fantasy football scores.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want to miss the Ravens game.
Exactly.
I assume they play on Sunday. I don't know what the Monday night schedule looks like. Yeah, how long of a drive is that?
That is 10-hour drive. It's
pretty far.
It's doable if I leave in the morning. Like, if I leave here in the morning, it's not that bad. I get in at a reasonable time. I have to stop a few times anyway, so I'm not ever really driving for more than, like, 4 hours. I'm not ever really driving for more than a 4-hour stretch at a time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I do the same thing. I leave, like, around as close to 9 as I can usually when I go back home. The trouble is that brings me through 285 at about 4:30 in the afternoon, which, if you've ever driven through Atlanta, you know is a bad place to be at 4:30 in the afternoon. And so usually I tack on an extra 30 minutes to the trip just because of that, and then also going through Nashville and stuff like that. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. We are here to talk about, well, I think it's probably instructive to go back and look at the Louisville game.
Yeah.
Maybe just some big picture or small picture takeaways from that game, kind of what we saw, and then maybe use that as a lens through which to look at this Butler game. Right now, Indiana, you know, I think you have to be pretty pleased with how they've played if you're an Indiana fan. And Zach Osterman talked with Alex and Jared on the regular podcast on the Brink, I think, which came out today.
Yes.
I use 8-2. Obviously, the blowout loss to Duke, the close loss to Arkansas, they're a tip layup away from being 9-1. And overall, you know, the last three games have been a little close. They've had to kind of grind some of them out. They finished the Louisville game pretty strong, I thought. But in general, I think Indiana's in a pretty good place, right on kind of the fringes of the top 25, ranked number 25 right now.
Tied.
And
number 25 in KenPom.
Yep. And you can bet that Indiana's going to be tacking that number 25 next to their name. So we'll count it. And yeah, that Louisville game, you know, it was similar to the Northwestern and the Penn State games in the sense that it was really close. It came down to execution down the stretch. But I thought it was different in the sense that Indiana was actually the one that was executing down the stretch in that game, as opposed to those last two. I really felt like Indiana kind of just limped its way across the finish line against both Northwestern and Penn State, whereas against Louisville, you really saw them make a push late in the game. You know, they executed their offense really well. They really clamped down on defense and came up with some big stops. And it just felt like they had the momentum closing out that game rather than, you know, just barely holding on to it as the other team kind of gained momentum. You felt like if there were 2 to 5 more minutes left in those Northwestern and Penn State games, Indiana probably would have lost. Whereas you felt like if that had been the case against Louisville, they probably win pretty handily.
Yeah, I think the best way you can put it is that against Penn State and Northwestern, I think Indiana really did hang on to the win. They just hung on at the end, but I think Indiana put it away against Louisville. I think they, you know, that big three by Finney is the one that I keep going back to with a little over a minute to go. That was the big play of the game. But I mean, he had a few big plays, but I mean, Romeo was big down the stretch. Obviously, Juwan Morgan, always big. But I think my biggest takeaway from this game was the way that Deron Davis and Justin Smith both played. Those two were in need of good performances, and they really came up with good performances, because I think we were starting to get into the territory with those two where if they continued to just be non-factors on the court, you were going to start to question how viable it was to keep running out there for big minutes.
Right. And I Justin Smith has been such a weird season for him, because his offense at times has just been disastrous. He's been an absolute zero, if not a negative, on the court, on the offensive end, and has just looked terrible. At the same point, though, I think ever since that Arkansas game, he was bad on defense in the Arkansas game, but ever since then, I think his defense has actually been really, really good. You know, Zion Williamson obviously had a big night against Indiana, but I thought Smith did a pretty good job on him for the most part, as good as you can do against Zion Williamson.
And you can pretty much say the same thing about how he defended Jordan Wara.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Lamar Stevens, Jordan Wara, you know, he is a good defensive player. He's got the versatility, he's got the quickness, the strength, all that kind of stuff. I think he plays a smart brand of defense and just has good instincts. You saw that as a freshman, and now it's, I think, translating even to longer minutes as a sophomore. The offense is still a concern, and against Louisville, I think we saw him in the right role, you know, where he's not handling the ball a ton. He's picking his spots. He's able to kind of attack closeouts, you know, attack people off the dribble with one or two dribbles as opposed to three or four.
It helps when he's coming out of the corner a little more. We saw he got away from that a little bit, but he was going back to that some more against Louisville with success.
Yeah, I thought his judgment was a little bit better. You know, he's never going to be a great playmaker or assist guy, but he at least was, you know, not forcing shots in the same way that he had been before. And I think, you know, I wrote this in the post-game email for the assembly call that they need him to play that role. They need him to be that, you know, dynamic Swiss Army knife kind of defender, and then just kind of pick his spots on offense. And that's all he really needs to do on offense, because there's so much offensive talent. And so I'm interested to see if that performance from the Louisville game really carries through for Justin Smith, not just to the Butler game, but kind of beyond that as they enter in a conference play.
Yeah, right. Like, so many, you mentioned how much he's a negative sometimes. Just so many times when he drives in, it's borderline reckless. Like, he'll just drive in. It stuck out to me the most against Duke when he was going up against Zion, who obviously can just get up super high and was throwing down big highlight reel slam dunks. And it felt for most of that game, like Zion got in his head a little bit and he was trying to one-up Zion Williamson. And one-up Zion Williamson. Good luck with that. But I think against Louisville, you saw a much less reckless and a much more smart version of Smith. Like you say, he picks his spots and just, you know, he wasn't forcing things as much. I mean, he had finished with 9 points, 4 for 8 on a 4 for 8 line. And that just shows me a player who's not, he's still got room to improve. Don't get us wrong by any stretch, But he was picking his spots much. He was picking the better spots. He wasn't just picking his spots. He was picking better spots.
Yeah, and you know, to keep it kind of with the front court and maybe transition another player, I think, you know, we didn't see basically any of Evan Fitzner against Louisville, and he only played 2 minutes. I think that was probably just matchup based. They felt like he couldn't really give them much. I tend to disagree. I think he's a valuable player, and I think he's not being used in the best way. But against Butler, that's maybe a team where he fits in a little bit better schematically, athletically. You know, I think just these athletic teams that Indiana as a team tends to struggle with, Fitzner especially just kind of has problems defensively in those matchups. He brings, he's almost the opposite of Justin Smith, where he's a liability on defense against great athletes, but he can add a lot of value on the offensive end. Smith is obviously the opposite, or has been at least. So, yeah, I mean, I think I would like to see Evan Fitzner, used in a little bit better way. I've written that before on Inside the Hall. You can check that out. But against Butler, I think that's, and maybe this is a good way to transition in the Butler game.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think maybe he plays a little bit bigger role. And then the question then becomes, is it Deron Davis playing less? Is it Justin Smith playing less with the absence of like a superstar power forward? Is it, I mean, obviously Jawan Morgan, I think, is just going to play his minutes because he's earned that and that's his role. So I'm curious, you know, who does that deduction in minutes come from if Evan Fitzner is going to play a little bit bigger role?
Yeah, well, in general, I think a lot of the time, I think Fitzner's role is really shaped by what kind of the foul situation of other Indiana players, because when Jawan Morgan and Deron Davis are in foul trouble, I think Indiana has no choice really but to put Evan Fitzner at the five, and that's not really where you want him. You don't want him camped in the paint being the big guy trying to get the rebounds. You want him beyond the three-point line shooting. And I mean, you've hit on that in your pieces. You've been talking about that for a little while now, and that's where Evan Fitzner's strength lies. So I think against Butler, he will have a little bit more of a role to play. He didn't match up very well with Louisville defensively, but you mentioned who's going to lose minutes. I am not sure that anyone may have to lose minutes for Fitzner to get a role. To make, I guess, my first point about the Butler game, when you start looking at Butler's roster, they only really have two big guys that they play a lot, in Nate Fowler and Joey Brunk. And when you kind of look at the breakdowns, they almost never put those two guys in the game together. They try to keep those two separate, I guess, avoiding foul trouble, just spreading out the size because they don't have that much size. So I think it's obviously risky to throw Deron Davis and Jawan Morgan out together for Indiana just because of what I just said with the foul trouble, and that could when they tried that against Penn State, you know, we saw Clifton Moore for a little bit, and but I think it could be a risk worth taking for Indiana in this game, because just they're going to have a size, even though IU plays small ball, they're going to have a size advantage in this game. And I think they could really force some mismatches for Jawan Morgan if they put Deron Davis out there with him, if they put Evan Fitzner out there with him.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that either Davis or Morgan is going to have to lose minutes for Fitzner to play a bigger role this game.
Yeah, that's interesting. And they also don't have that many like combo forwards, you know, that like the power forward. Right. It's basically
they've like two centers and then a bunch of small forwards.
Right, they've got a bunch of guys who are 6'6 or smaller, and then two guys who are 6'10 and 6'11 and nothing in between. So that's why I wonder, is this a game where Justin Smith doesn't play quite as big of a role because he doesn't have that Lamar Stevens, that Jordan Wara type of forward to defend? And then, you know, he's still a valuable player, I think, defensively, just he's gonna play, he's gonna start, just as far as executing the scheme and you know, just being a useful defensive player. But maybe you don't need him on the court on every possession to guard the other team's best player in the same way that you do against a Louisville or a Duke, which obviously that didn't play out well for Indiana, or a Penn State or something like that. So that could be one source of it. And then, I agree that I think Fitzner does help create some matchup problems either for Jawan Morgan or for Evan Fitzner, because, you know, as I had a big piece come out on Morgan this week that, And one of the points that I made was, you know, if you cheat on to Morgan and double team, he's going to find guys like Fitzner for threes. If you stay home on the shooters, Juwan Morgan is one of the best post scorers in the Big Ten, and he's just going to score on you. So I think Butler in particular could have some real trouble dealing with that.
And especially given the lack of size I mentioned, with if Indiana does decide to throw two bigs in there, because then if, let's say, Deron Davis and Juwan Morgan are both in the game, then, you know, Butler may have to, unless Butler's going to break from what they've been doing and put both of their centers in the game at the same time, then you're basically going to end up with probably a small forward guarding Juwan Morgan. And yeah, he can just body a small forward.
I think if I were Butler, I'd play it the other way. I'd put the small guy on Fitzner, not just because he's not as big of a threat to score in the post, and you don't need as much size on him because he's not as strong anymore, plays on the perimeter and shoots threes, and you can play that a little bit easier. But also, you know, like I've said before, like I wrote last week, Fitzner, he likes to post up. He likes to stand 10 feet from the basket and call for the ball. And if I'm Butler, I almost feel like you could trick Indiana into taking bad shots by putting a small guy on Fitzner, making him shoot post shots, which aren't great shots for him. And then, you know, you basically end up forcing more empty possessions than you would if you put some size on him. And if you do that against Juwan Morgan, he's good enough in the post that he's just going to power through that smaller guy and score. So if I don't know that Butler would do that.
You're basically saying that Butler should create the mismatch at once.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're inviting Evan Fitzner to take bad shots. Which,
yeah, that's a valid point.
So, and again, I don't know if Butler will do that. I don't know. You know, their defensive tendencies well enough to really comment on that. But that's what I would do if I and. I should also say it's not like Fitzner's going to be playing the whole game or starting or anything like that. So there would only be certain pockets of the game in which that would apply. But I do think that that's one advantage, because if you do that against Deron Davis or Juwan Morgan, like I said, those guys are good enough that they can really take advantage of that. But I don't think Fitzner is, and I don't think Justin Smith is, far as just being a post scorer. Those guys, you know, they need to be set up. They need to either cut to the basket or spot up and get their shots kind of created for them. So that's one interesting thing that I'll be looking at. But yeah, that size discrepancy that Indiana has.
It's rare that Indiana's going to have a size advantage with the roster they have, but that's what it's going to be this game.
Right, and so for that reason, I wonder if maybe they've been doing this a little bit anyway, but kind of playing that original starting lineup with Zach McRoberts in it a few more minutes, because you just have more size on the wing. You can play Romeo at the two, and he's 6'6", which is way bigger than any two guard that Butler has. And, you know, that small lineup with three-guard set that Indiana's been starting has been effective, and Al Durham's been really good. But I wonder if Indiana could look to create, again, just some more size mismatches by playing a little bit bigger look on the wing. I think that could be effective. It's a question of, you know, who's going to come out, probably Al Durham. And also, how healthy is Zach McRoberts, and is he hitting shots and all that sort of thing. So it's circumstantial. You know, it'll depend on kind of the context of the game and a play it by ear thing. But I do think that's something that Indiana could look at.
Yeah, definitely. And especially given that I think Butler's two most dangerous players also are, they're both guards. And especially when you start looking at, their two most dangerous players are Kamar Baldwin and Paul Jorgensen.
Yep.
And the main guy.
Yeah, we probably should go through the actual players on Butler.
the main guy you need to stop when you're playing Butler is Kamar Baldwin.
Yes.
Jorgensen leads them in scoring, but Baldwin does everything for them. And just to kind of even put that in perspective, his usage percentage is 31%.
It's a lot.
That's a lot. And like Romeo Langford's is 27 and Juwan Morgan's is 24. So like think of what Romeo Langford and Juwan Morgan do for Indiana. And then realize that Baldwin does 4% more for Butler than Romeo does for IU.
Right. And just to clarify, usage percentage is the amount of possession or the amount of your team's possessions while you're on the floor that end in you taking a shot, getting the free throw line, or turning it over.
Right.
So that's just kind of, and so I will just kind of as a side note, the reason Juwan Morgan's is only at 24% is because he's such a good passer that when you pass to a shooter or a cutter, that doesn't count toward usage. But that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Right. The point being, Baldwin leads Butler. He leads them in rebounding, assists, in defensive categories. Like he does it all for Butler, and he's had to take on a little bit of a bigger role this year, because the last few years with Butler, it was Baldwin and they had Keelan Martin running things, and now Keelan Martin's gone, so it's really been Baldwin. He's obviously gotten some help from guys like Jorgensen, mm-hmm. and but you know, it Baldwin's the guy to stop. And I'm interested to see how Indiana does against him. It's not quite maybe the challenge that Marcus Howard was, but like it's still a big challenge, and I would anticipate they may attack him similarly to what they did against Howard.
Yeah, Baldwin only 6 feet, worth noting. Jorgensen 6'2". So again, you're talking about smaller guys. I agree with you. Baldwin is not Howard, mostly because he doesn't shoot the three
right
quite as well. I mean, not nearly as well. He's shooting 26%. I think that's due for some progression to the mean. But I mean, Marcus Howard was a 40% 3-point shooter with, you know, taking shots off the dribble, like difficult contested shots. So I think they're in different stratospheres as shooters. But in terms of just being the head of the snake, the focal point, very similar. And Jorgensen is the guy that maybe concerns me if I'm Indiana, because he shoots 7 threes a game and shoots 43% on those shots.
Yeah.
So he's going to get shots up and he hits them. And you're going to have to chase him around screens. You're going to have to stick tight to him on the perimeter on spot ups. You come off screens, go over the fight over the screen when he's got the ball. That makes for a really difficult cover. And it, you know, the gravity that a player like that has, and just the way that he kind of bends an entire opposing defense toward him, it can create things for other players, especially if you're not really dialed in on that shooter. And so I wonder if that's probably Al Durham will start on that assignment.
Yeah,
just because
that's how I think that.
I think Al Durham is a good off-ball defender and a guy who can stay with shooters like that. I think Zach McRoberts is better. So that's another reason why maybe you look to play that bigger look on the wing, because you can put some length, some size on the shooter. And also McRoberts is, I mean, you know, he'd spend all 40 minutes just chasing someone around screens if that's what was asked of him. And,
exactly.
And that might be what is asked of him in this game. So I don't think Romeo Langford is great at that right now. I just think his defensive focus kind of comes and goes. It's been increasingly better, but against a knockdown shooter like that, you really have to be dialed in, which is why I think McRoberts could be a key for Indiana. But Al Durham, he's got good length. He's got good quickness. I think he's a smart, kind of cagey defender and can move his feet well. So I think either option would play pretty well for Indiana.
Yeah, and that is going to leave Rob Phinisee against Kamar Baldwin, which that'll be the matchup to watch.
Yeah, Rob Phinisee, I mean, he's so solid on offense that you almost forget about how good he is on defense.
And like, he's been good.
He slides his feet, gets over screens, you know, gets into his man, applies pressure, really good in that defensive scheme. And, you know, Rob is also only about 6 feet.
Right.
So that kind of makes for that natural matchup between him and Baldwin.
Yeah. The interesting thing when I was looking at Jorgensen, that you touched on Fitzner so much. They're not the same size, obviously,
right.
But I think Jorgensen is what you keep saying Evan Fitzner needs to be.
Really?
Yeah, because
Because
when you look at Jorgensen's numbers throughout his career, and like last year with Butler, he shot 35%. He's shooting it way better than he has ever in his career, up at 43%, 44%. Yep. He shot 36% from 3-point range he's a transfer from George Washington.
Okay.
So in 2 years at George Washington, he shot 36%. Last year, when he shot 35% from three with Butler, he was attempting 4.9 threes per game. Guess how many threes he's attempting this year?
It's like 7.5 or something?
7.2 threes per game. And his made threes per game jumped from 1.7 to 3.1. That's exactly what you're saying Evan Fitzner needs to do.
And you mentioned he's only about a 36% career three-point shooter. Even if you don't shoot 40%, even if you're not like elite at making threes, just the fact that you're taking 7 a game on above average efficiency, it makes the defense have to guard you. And yeah, I don't want to open up this can of worms with Fitzner again, because we've done that so many times. But yeah, I mean, Fitzner, just like, if you don't stand behind the arc, defenses don't have to guard you behind the arc, and therefore they can they're standing closer to the basket. It's a simple kind of geometry issue. So you can go read my piece on that if you want to kind of know more about my thoughts on that.
That was a long-winded plug for Ben's piece.
Yeah. So, but it's a good point, because like I said, the gravity of that kind of player and the way it bends a defense, you need to be taking those shots. And if you can hit them at 43%, that's great. But even if you're only 36%, I mean, just that threat, it's all about the threat. And then you don't want to say that the making of the shots is an ancillary benefit, because it's obviously super valuable, but really it is about what it does for the rest of the offense. Because you know, if you don't take away the threes, like if you just say, okay, we're not going to let his gravity bend our defense, you know, out of whack, and you just play regular defense, well, then he's shooting threes and he's making them at 43%. So it's really kind of a pick your poison. You can either cover the shooter or you can surrender driving lanes. And Butler has the type of slashing point guard in Kamar Baldwin that can take advantage of those driving lanes.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, definitely. And then to look more at Indiana offensively a little bit again, what do you think Romeo Langford's going to do in this game? Because by their starting lineup, they play with really three guard. Their starting lineup is basically three guards, a small forward, and a center. They have a lot of small forwards that kind of sub in, I guess. So he's going to see a lot of different defensive looks throughout the game, which that could be interesting.
Yeah, I just don't know that Butler has anyone that can guard him. And when I look at, you know, what just kind of the broad strokes head-to-head matchup in this game, like I think Indiana's two best players are better than Butler's two best players. And that may just be what it comes down to. Butler might not have anyone that can guard Romeo Langford or Juwan Morgan. And it might be a different story if IU's best players were also lead guards who were, you know, smaller, played in the backcourt, and did the same kinds of things that Baldwin and Jorgensen do.
Right.
But they're not. They're completely different types of players that it makes for a really tough matchup for Butler. I think Butler, you know, Indiana matches up well with Butler, but Butler does not match up well with Indiana.
Yeah.
And I could just see, like, you stick a 6'3 guy on Romeo Langford and he can shoot over him, he can take him in the post, he can go by him, like... He just has so many different ways of scoring that I don't know. I don't know that's an amount of size that you want to be giving up to a scorer like that.
Well, these days, Butler might want Romeo Langford to shoot over him.
That's true. That's true. We haven't talked about his three-point shooting yet.
You kind of were expecting when he came out cold at the beginning of the year. I think we were all kind of expecting, you know, he's settling in, he'll get better. It really hasn't.
Yeah, if we get to like the end of January and he's still in the 20s or low 30s, I'll be concerned.
I mean, he's in the low 20s right now.
Yeah, it's not been great, but I still trust.
He's obviously still a threat. He's obviously still a threat out there, and I think other teams, like, the respect that's paid to him, at least when he's shooting threes, like, other teams realize this guy can shoot, and he's not just a bad shooter. He's just...
Yeah.
I don't know. He's got to figure something out, or...
No, I agree.
Settle in a little bit more, but... The 23% is going to have to change.
Yeah, and I think there are some mechanical things going on where if you told me that he does finish the year shooting 28% from three, I wouldn't be surprised because, his form is just, to me, it's been like a little weird, not totally replicable. He's not shooting the same shot every time. He's not really releasing in the same way every time. So if you told me that he doesn't finish the year above 30%, then I wouldn't be shocked. But I also think that there's just enough of a track record and he's a good enough to just kind of natural scorer and shooter that he'll probably figure it out. But again, if we get to February 1st and he's still not shooting the ball, then it becomes a little bit more concerning because teams are going to be thinking the same way. You talked about how teams still guard Romeo Langford as though he's going to knock down those shots. I think that's because most opponents kind of have the sense of, okay, well, it's just an early season slump. Like, he's going to really get going. And we don't want to be the team that lets him get going. But if you get to the middle of the Big Ten season and he's still not shooting well, then teams are going to start thinking, okay, maybe he's just not a great shooter and we don't have to guard him the same way.
Right, definitely. And the other aspect of his shooting struggles is at the free throw line. That's a whole team struggle, really. But I guess it's a little more intensified with Romeo just with how much he gets to the free throw line.
You know, 69% is higher than I thought it was. I really thought that he was below that on the season. So I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that number, which is not a great sign. If you're pleasantly surprised that someone's shooting below 70% from the free throw line, it is not a great indication of your confidence in them as a free throw shooter.
It's only at this rate, with the way IU is shooting free throws, it's only a matter of time before it costs him a game. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, and Juwan Morgan is 48% which is, I mean, he gets fouled a ton, not as much as Romeo, but it like similar. I mean, he's just a load in the post and he's always going to attack the basket. And so it makes for a difficult, you know, kind of situation where Indiana wants to attack the basket. They want to put pressure on the rim, get to the free throw line. That's like their big emphasis on offense is get to the basket, get fouled. And they have guys who can get fouled. They just don't have anyone who can make the free throws.
Right.
Which, what's the point of getting fouled if you're not going to make free
like,
throws?
Like, I even noticed in the last game, like, I thought Romeo was doing a better job of intentionally going in and drawing contact, whereas, you know, before he was just kind of going up, hoping to score and getting fouled. I think the thing is to turn that into a viable weapon, like going in and being good at drawing fouls, you have to knock down the free throws.
Yeah, and another thing too, if we're talking about his 3-point shooting again, free throw percentage is often an indicator of how good of a 3-point shooter someone's going to be long term. And so I guess I'm thinking of this more kind of from an NBA draft perspective, but I think it's still relevant because I think teams, you know, if there was any hope of like, okay, he shot a bad 3-point percentage, but he's a better shooter than that, you know, teams are going to look at his free throw percentage. And if that's low, then you start to, the sirens start to kind of go off and you say, okay, maybe this guy's just not that great of a shooter. And for someone whose kind of main calling card going into college was his shooting ability,
among many,
he has other things, but I think that was kind of the big thing, at least in my eyes. I was like, okay, this guy's gonna be able to space the floor, knock down shots off the dribble, all that kind of thing, and he can get to the basket and stuff like that as well. But that was, to me, one of his most valuable skills, and it just hasn't really been there. That said, he's still having a fantastic season,
right?
You know, at 18 points
any
a game.
Any criticism you make about Romeo Langford is like nitpick. Oh, exactly. It feels I mean, the 3-point shooting is a legitimate issue when you're shooting 23% and expected to be one of the better shooters on the team. But, you know, it feels like nitpicking any criticism you make of Romeo Langford just because of how good he's been.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I, you know, we've been talking all season about when is that big Romeo Langford breakout going to come. It's kind of a trope to just be like, oh, it's going to be this game. It's going to be this game. And just say every game until it happens. But that said,
Tune in next week to see when.
But I do think, you know, we talked about it before, that just the matchups against Butler, the Bulldogs don't match up super well against the Hoosiers. And so, you know, this, I think there's more reason to believe that this could be the game where he breaks out than there was against Louisville or against Northwestern or Penn State or a team like that. Because all three of those teams had viable defensive options in Vic Law, Josh Reeves,
Sutton,
Dwayne Sutton. That could, you know, Dwayne Sutton's not an elite defender, but the other two guys are, and you felt like, okay, they can make him uncomfortable. They can take away some of his looks, and they did. I mean, he still got his to an extent, but they at least made it difficult for him. Butler, I just don't think has anyone that can make Romeo Langford's shots difficult. At least not to a degree that it'll really matter.
Yeah, completely agree. All right, one X factor for Indiana. Pick one player who do you got?
I'm going to say Fitzner for the reasons we talked about. Butler just doesn't have much size, and if you put him into the game, Butler either has to play both of their big guys together, which means that there are fewer minutes when they can have one of them on the floor. And then that probably leads to more minutes when neither of them are on the floor, which I don't know if they can even afford to do that. But his floor spacing ability, obviously, that I think that applies every game. But particularly against Butler, you're going to have to choose between putting a small guy on Fitzner or putting a small guy on Juwan Morgan or Deron Davis. And I just think that puts Butler in a really thorny position that they don't want to be in.
Yeah. To avoid making a similar point, I will name my X factor as Rob Phinisee.
Okay.
I think just on both ends of the floor, given how critical his matchup is going to be defending Kamar Baldwin, assuming that's the matchup that we get, but also just offensively, I've noticed this all season. We've commented on it sparingly at other times, but Indiana's offense just looks so much better when Rob Phinisee's playing well.
Yeah.
When Rob Phinisee is playing well, everything is kind of moving in sync. You know, he may not be the straw that stirs the drink like Juwan Morgan, I guess you would say, is.
Yeah.
But he really does make things go when he's playing well. He showed in the last game he can knock down a big shot when you need him to. He can find the open guy. He can be an offensive threat.
Yeah. Another thing I'll add, you know, Juwan Morgan's an X factor every game.
Right.
But I'll say
that's a cop out.
I think, no, but I want to make the point that I think he could have a big passing game. I think you could see him rack up several assists, even more so than he has been this season.
That's something that could be super exploitable with the size advantage.
Right, because Butler's, you know, if they have a couple guys who are pretty big, but I don't know that either of them can really single cover Juwan Morgan. And so you could see Butler employ a lot of double teams against Juwan, and he's such a good passer that if Indiana can knock down shots, which has not always been a given this year, but if they can knock down open threes, you know, if Smith is cutting hard to the basket, if Fitzner's cutting, if Fitzner's spacing the floor, that kind of thing, they could have, Morgan could have a big game in the assist column, I think.
Definitely.
But we'll see. Programming note, I will add that we did not have a podcast for the Louisville game because, first of all, we couldn't figure out how to work the equipment to record it, which is embarrassing on our part. So we used backup equipment, and long story short, we had technical difficulties, and
technology was not on our side that day.
It did not favor us. So the episode was basically cut in half, and there was just not enough to publish a full episode. So we had to scrap that one. But one thing we said at the end of that episode was that if you guys have questions or anything like that, something you want to, you know, hear us talk about, something you are just curious about, find us on Twitter. You know, if you have any other means of communication between, you know, in terms of getting in touch with us, I don't know if or why you would, but if you do, feel free to get in touch with us.
Or you can even send questions for us to Alex or Jared.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll ever really do a true, like, mailbag type. We're never really going to, that's just not our show, but, you know, if you guys actually have questions, that can drive a lot of interesting discussion.
Yeah, I agree. I would totally agree with that. One final plug for me. We've touched on it multiple times throughout the podcast, but check out my stories on InsideTheHall.com on Evan Fitzner and Juwan Morgan. The Morgan one in particular, I spent a lot of time on and thought turned out pretty nicely. So I'd appreciate, you know, checking that out.
It's worth it.
Seth, what do you have going on?
I will have some stories coming up on some Indiana recruits. Okay. So keep an eye out for that.
All right. I'm actually excited to read that. I have a story idea for a recruit as well, but I don't know that I'll have the time or availability to do it. We'll see. Keep you posted on that. Unless you have anything else to add, we will call that a show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to y'all next time.
If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU Hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.